This is Talk of the Nation. I'm John Idsty in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. Americans whose kids attend public schools have been making a lot of noise lately. From Fairbanks to Denver to Olympia, Washington, parents and students have protested proposed cuts in education funding. But what's a state to do? While education may be the most sacred line in a state budget, it's usually the largest, too. In the face of major budget shortfalls, governors and state legislatures are making the painful cuts. Bus routes are being dropped. Teachers are doubling as janitors. College scholarships are being eliminated. Today, we begin a series looking at tough choices in state budgets with a focus on education. What's on the chopping block where you live? How is your state dealing with its tight budget? If you were governor and something had to give, what priorities would you set for education? What would you be willing to trim? And what would it mean in the classroom? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us by phone is Governor Mike Easley of North Carolina. He has been on the front line of making tough choices in his state budget. Welcome to the show, Governor.
Happy to be with you. Thank you.
You had a head start on most states. Your budget went south a year earlier than other states, so you had to take a hard look at this early.
Well, we really did. We were recovering from a flood that cost us close to $1 billion in 1999 and 2000. And we started seeing the results of loss in manufacturing and textile jobs, as well as agriculture and telecom early on. So we faced reality pretty quickly and made some tough choices with a real focus on education and investing in our people.
And you took a step that would make most state governments nervous. You raised taxes. How were you able to do that?
Well, we had a legislature that that had the courage to do it. They recognized that we were in a recession. There was very little inflation. And they knew that we were going to have to do some serious cutting, set our priorities, but we also needed some revenue. So we raised about $600 million in taxes of a $15 billion budget, but the rest we cut. And we asked managers, our cabinet secretaries, to define mission and stick with that core mission. And they were able to do that. So we shrunk state government on one hand, but invested more in education at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've had to make some cuts in education, though, haven't you? I mean, you've cut things like custodial salaries. You've dropped clerical support. You've made education do with less in some cases.
Well, what we've done in education is cut outside the classroom. We've actually got a net increase in the education budget. But we've cut the administration, some of the custodial, those types of things, and invested more in teachers. We've reduced class size, K through 3. We've started a pre-K program for at-risk four-year-olds called Mort 4 all in the last couple of years. We've increased enrollment in community colleges and in our 16 campuses on the university system. So all of those things we've done at the same time that that we've made the cuts and reduced the overall state operating budget.
No impact on life in the classroom?
None at all. As a matter of fact, we've reduced class size, and that is the one thing that we said we were going to do. We're going to have the discipline to invest in education, because the future is about, you can't tax and cut your way out of it. You have to grow your way out. So it's about us creating knowledge. My job is to attract talent, to attract knowledge, retain that talent, and that means that we have to have a workforce that's much more skilled and knowledgeable in the future than we've had in the past. And our goal is to be the most skilled workforce in the country over the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for taking the time to join us today, Governor.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Governor Mike Easley of North Carolina. And heading north, we're joined by Governor John Rowland of Connecticut.
Yes, John. How are you?
Welcome to the show.
Nice to be on.
What kind of trouble is Connecticut facing in your budget this year?
I would say trouble might not be the right word. Maybe reality. 45 states have budget deficits this year. We're coming off of about 7 years of incredible budget surpluses. So we've been able to, over the last 7 years, been able to reduce debt and start endowments for our universities and make huge investments in magnet schools and charter schools and our urban communities, especially the school system itself. And we've been able to make some extraordinary investments in the University of Connecticut, our Connecticut State University system, our Voc-Tech high schools, and across the board. So we're coming off of seven pretty extraordinary years, and now we're facing economic realities of the revenue slowing down considerably coming into the state.
And how much are you going to have to cut from education?
Well, we're not really cutting really the budget itself. What we're doing is we're pretty much holding the line on what we spent last year. Our total budget's about general fund budget is about $14 billion, and like many states, our local budgets and our local school districts are run by the cities and towns. Mm-hmm. So we send, for example, in some communities, 80% of their budget is financed by the state, and some of the more affluent communities, maybe it's only 20% or 30%. So it's pretty much run by the cities and towns. Now, many of the cities and towns will say, wow, we're not getting as much as we had hoped for, as much as we'd like, or as much as we had budgeted last year. But the bottom line is that it's pretty much level funding across the board. And we still have number one in reading and writing and math at the fourth and sixth grade levels. And we still have extraordinary accomplishments of our kids going into the colleges and the university systems with SAT scores and participation mm-hmm. rates.
Now, I presume, though, that the states or that the local communities and schools are facing some inflation, some commitments for salary and those sorts of things. Aren't there going to have to be some things that give in terms of education?
Not necessarily. Is the wish list accomplished? Probably not. Do we still have reading programs and after-school programs and before-school programs and Head Start programs and mentoring programs and charter school programs? And the answer is yes. We've increased our education budget dramatically over the years, and now it's pretty much going to be level funding. Our populations are increasing, so we'd sure like to build even more schools, but in just the last 5 or 6 years, we have rehabbed about 1,400 schools and built 31 new magnet schools. So mm-hmm. we've really been able to answer the cry of the baby boomers and the I call it the mini baby boom that's taking place out there at the middle school level. So at the end of the day, we're still in pretty darn good shape with regard to teachers. We have the highest paid teachers in the United States of America, and we probably spend a lot more than most other states do on education per child. There might be maybe one other state that spends more, but for the most part, we're probably number one or number mm-hmm. two in expenditures per student.
Governor, if you're holding education pretty much harmless, what else is giving in your state budget? Where are you making cuts in order to make sure you're balanced?
Well, I'm just about to walk into a press conference where I've canceled the state fleet of vehicles for commissioners and deputy commissioners and employees. We're giving back about 250 cars and
maybe you'll want to stay with us instead of going to that press conference. It
sounds oh, no, this is an easy one. We'll save $25 million, and these are some of the cutbacks. We've had we have an early retirement plan. About 4,000 to 5,000 people will take the early retirement plan. I tried to negotiate concessions with the state employee unions, but they would not do that. We ended up with 2,800 layoffs of state employees to reduce the workforce. So I reduced the state workforce by almost 10% by the end of this fiscal year.
Hmm. Are tax hikes a possibility, as was done in North Carolina?
Well, that's already happened. We had a $800 million deficit this past fiscal year, and we're starting the new budget this year. And so we increased the cigarette tax, and we had a slight increase in the income tax. So there have been small increases across the board. I do not anticipate, at least as far as I'm concerned, more tax increases this year. I want to hold the line on spending. Even with the, you know, you mentioned inflation and other salary increases, even with those increases, we're going to have our budget go up by about 2.5% this year and about 4.5% the following year. So everybody's going to be sharing the pain across the board, and that's what's happening in everybody's household income. If mm-hmm. your income is as flat as last year, you can't go on vacation as often and out to dinner as many times.
Governor, you mentioned big investments in education over the last few years. Last 7 years, I guess. Are those over now? Is the road ahead going to be pretty tight as far as the eye can see?
For the next year, for sure. Mm-hmm. A lot of our income comes from capital gains, interest dividends. The stock market decline over the last year has significantly impacted the revenue to our state. And frankly, even if you increase taxes more on corporations or businesses or individuals, with a flat economy like this, you really can't squeeze too much out of the taxpayer. You've got to hold the line on the spending side. Mm-hmm. So it's a cultural change for us. I mean, after 6 or 7 years of 6, 7, 8% increases in the budget, this year it's only going to be 2 to 3%, and we're going to be able to live with it. But if by increasing taxes, you're just going to hurt the economy and drive us further into recession.
Thanks for joining us, Governor.
Thank you very much, John.
Governor John Rowland of Connecticut joined us by telephone. And joining us now from Denver, Colorado, is Mike Griffith, a policy analyst with the Education Commission of the States, which tracks state spending in education. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for inviting me.
Put what we've heard from the governors in context, Mr. Griffith. How does the decision to raise taxes that was made by Governor Easley compare with other states, for instance?
Well, we don't see a lot of states increasing their sales or their income tax. What we see in the last year or so is a lot of states that increased what we call the sin taxes, taxes on cigarettes, alcohol, and the like. We've also seen a handful of states starting to close tax loopholes or to freeze or stop cuts that they had promised in earlier years. This will be the first year in the past 5 years that we've seen actual state tax increases. Mm-hmm. Between 1995 and 2000, we actually saw per student expenditures in education increase by 13% above the rate of inflation. At the same time that was going on, we saw decreases in state tax revenue each year, or I'm sorry, state tax
rate, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and so it ended up, you know, it was a win-win situation for governors and legislators that they could increase spending on education, they could decrease taxes, and everything came out well. Now we're seeing that they've got to make these tough decisions, that they've got to either decrease their spending or they're going to have to increase the revenue source.
Mm-hmm.
And both those governors talked about that.
Yeah, let's talk about Connecticut for a moment. It sounds like Connecticut mm-hmm. made big investments, as you were suggesting a lot of states have.
Sure.
Now they're basically holding education harmless. Is that the case in most states, or is it biting in a lot of states? Are there cuts in education?
We saw during this school year, 2002-2003 school year, freezes in a lot of states. And in fact, a lot of states came in at the beginning of the school year promising that there would be a slight increase, about 2% or so across the board. But we then saw the economy continued to stagnate, and about 27 different states have gone back now and cut the amount of funding they supply to education. And we're seeing that trend, unfortunately, going to continue during this upcoming school year, 2003-2004. It takes about 18 months to 12 months for the economy to recover, for state budgets to recover once the economy has recovered.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at best, a stagnant year in a lot of states. And unfortunately, in a lot of states, we're looking at education cuts in the 5 to 10% range mm-hmm. from the state sources.
Are we seeing states across the board with these challenges, or are there a few states that are in good shape, relatively speaking?
Wyoming's in good shape.
Wyoming?
They are the only ones.
Uh-huh.
And basically because they are more reliant on oil and gas taxes and coal. The other states, though, are all hurting to one extent or another. We're seeing sort of the extremes in places like Oregon, where they were very reliant on capital gains mm-hmm. Tax income. When the stock market began to disintegrate, they didn't have an alternative revenue source that could replace it. And because of that, schools in Oregon, a great deal of them, had to end their school year 9 days early this year. And the Portland School District was going to have to end their school year 25 days early. But teachers there have volunteered an additional 2 weeks to try to hope to keep the school year going on there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's on the extreme end, but there are a lot that have had to make cuts.
Mm-hmm. We'll be back to talk more about the tough choices states are making in education spending, and we'll take your calls at 800-989-TALK. You can send us an email at totn@npr.org. I'm John Itzty. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm John Itzty in Washington. Later on in the hour, we'll talk about how higher education funding is different than K through 12. Right now, we're talking about tough choices governors and state legislatures are making in budget decisions. What are you willing to trade off for education spending? Homeland security spending? Medicare? If you were the governor, how would you shape the budget? You're invited to join the discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Mike Griffith, a policy analyst with the Education Commission of the States, which tracks state spending in education. He's joining us from Denver, Colorado. But first off, let's go to a caller, Pat in Bridgewater, Massachusetts. Pat, you have a question or a comment?
Yes. I would agree with one of the governors that you were talking about in raising taxes. I think especially around the schools, that if you ask a lot of parents, that if you had a choice between either not raising taxes or having poor, teachers laid off and school system getting worse instead of better, I think that most people would say yes to raising taxes.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
The other question I had is, I know that a lot of states have mandatory balancing of the budget, and the federal government doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if voters really, if they don't care about the federal government being balancing the budget, I wonder if they can get away with it, why states has to, if it means affecting the schools and services.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's ask Mike Griffith about, first of all, are most people in states willing to see taxes raised in order to fund education?
Well, a lot of policymakers, when they originally ran, both governors and state legislators, made the promise that they would not increase taxes. And this kind of combines with the fact that they had also made the promise to continue to fund education. And so in some ways, their hands are tied. They don't want to go against either one of those. And in fact, there was just an announcement in the last couple of days about Missouri not willing to, the governor and the legislature has steadfastly said now they will not increase taxes, and that will mean about a $300 million cut in education spending.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's more of the trend that we've seen.
Mm-hmm. Pat, are you still on the line?
Yes, I am.
Pat, what's going on in Massachusetts with education?
Well,
are there budget cuts in education?
Yes, I hear that the schools and the libraries are really nervous. They're really scared,
mm-hmm,
of what's going to happen because they have to balance the budget. And we have a governor that says no matter what, he's not going to raise taxes. And I just don't know if he's listening to the voters, because I think, especially I read in the papers about, voters are protesting, budget cuts in the school system, and they're very upset about it. I mean, all across the country, there's these massive marches going on.
Right, right. We've heard
and
a lot about that.
I don't know if the politicians are listening to the voters or just listening to what their camp, a certain percentage of the, I think what it is that the way the politicians portray it is that either people don't want to raise their taxes raised. And yes, if you put it like that, most people say, no, I don't. But if you say your school system is going to go down and is going to become worse, then people are going to say, well, yeah, well, if I need to raise taxes so my kids get educated, yes, I'll do that.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Pat.
Okay, you're welcome.
Paula in Portland, Oregon, you're on the air. Do you have a question or a comment? Hello, Paula, are you there?
Portland.
Sorry.
Pardon?
I'm sorry, I think we missed the first part there.
Oh.
Would you start
okay.
again?
Okay, well, thank you anyway just for taking my call. Here in Portland, as you have heard, your speaker was talking about, we have a total crisis. We're very grateful for the teachers who've decided to contribute their time to educate our kids. But I'm mainly concerned about the cuts that are being done in the programs serving autistic and special needs kids. We're having a 700% increase in autism in the last 10 years, and they're now estimating between 1 in 80 and 1 in 150 kids are now diagnosed with autism. And these are kids who can't even speak, and many, you get a 3-year-old who can't talk and has all kinds of sensory integration problems, and if you don't give services to these kids early on, try integrating them into a regular school when they're 5, it's just not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So here in Portland, they're even considering cutting out the Birth to 3 program, which is just vital. I mean, these kids, they need everything they can get. Here in Portland, the Portland Public School District decided to drop the contract for providing services for these kids, gave us 30 days notice, fired all our teachers, and just kind of then just said, well, does anybody else want to provide services? And our teachers all have their pink slips in hands right now, and we've been very fortunate that another provider, the county, has decided to take up the contract, but our teachers still don't have jobs. They have to now apply to the county. They have to take, you know, give up all their seniority, take pay cuts, and, you know, thank God they took us on. But, my God, I mean, you've got kids who are in terrible need mm-hmm. of education, especially if we want to have them be anywhere near ready for kindergarten.
Mike Griffith, is Oregon in the worst shape in the country in terms of education spending and the cuts that need to be made?
Yes. Mm-hmm. When we look around, pretty much we see Oregon is probably the top, and then California is running into a lot of difficulties also. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones who are starting to make some real cuts that are affecting classroom services. And as you could hear this last speaker mm-hmm. talking about, she mentioned that.
Mm-hmm. Why so bad in Oregon? What's the problem there?
Well, they had taken their school funding system and made some major changes to them. They had moved away from local funding of schools mm-hmm. to a more statewide funding of schools. Local funding tends to come from property taxes, which are more stable and handle economic downtimes better. And they moved to a statewide system that's funded by an income tax. When the economy dropped, and especially the stock market, they started to bring in less revenue from that mm-hmm. because they were bringing in a great deal from people selling out their shares in their company. In the Oregon area, they received a huge economic boom during mm-hmm. the late 90s.
Paula, what's your sense of why the state is in such trouble? Would you agree with
Mike
Griffith?
Oh, yes, and I think nobody wants to vote themselves a tax increase, but especially when we had a measure of not too long ago that people voted on, but it wasn't specifically for education. It was for all kinds of services. And I think that now we have an upcoming vote coming up, I think it's May 20th, regarding education specifically. And I hope to God that people will vote for it because the need is just tremendous. Like they said, they're reducing our school schedule by 28 days. And thank goodness again for those teachers who contributed 14 days out of their own lives to work for free.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Paula, in
Thank
Portland,
you.
Oregon. And let's go to Ray in Oklahoma City. Ray, hello.
Hello, yes. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just curious. I was a teacher in the Oklahoma school system for years and just quit because my colleagues and I agreed it's just not a career. It's just disgraceful. The conduct of the kids and the way that things are going. But anyway, our state recently elected a new governor who ran on a no lottery platform and then completely reversed it when he got in office, and now he's pushing for a lottery. I was just curious historically how well, I mean, I know it's well-meaning, but I don't think those things actually work. I've heard that results, the money never gets to the education, and there's a lot of skepticism in our state because the Indian gaming casinos promise the same thing, and the historical fact is a lot of that money does not get to the tribes. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's ask Mike Griffith whether he knows whether gaming and lotteries are helping to fund, fill the hole for education these days.
Well, lottery funds help to a certain extent, but when they're sold is the fact that they're going to completely pay for schooling, it's just not possible. In a state like Michigan, they get a couple of percentages of their total education money comes from a state lottery. The problem is it was sold to people that this would greatly increase spending on education and would make a lot of changes in the state. What states have done now is specifically targeted money for lotteries to programs within education, and Georgia is a good example. What they decided to do was use their lottery money for higher ed to provide scholarships to all their in-state students. So if you're an in-state student in Georgia, you now get a full ride. It's called the Hope Scholarship. And, mm-hmm. and they took the additional money and put it into early learning, and they are the only state right now that has a full preschool program that's open to every student within the state free of charge.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take it and put it towards specific programs, it's really noticeable and works. If you simply lump it in with the rest of the education spending, it tends to get lost.
Mm-hmm. We have this email from Evelyn. She says, I would make further cuts to the education system. Education seems to be the sacred cow of tax cuts, but less and less people are choosing to have children. Is it time we rethink how education is funded? What do you think? Is education a sacred cow, Mike Griffith? And if it is, should we think about funding it more through special taxes and fees on parents?
Well, that's a tough question. What I would say is people have been angry for years about local property taxes, and that local property taxes is going for education. That used to be the sole source of education spending back in the early 1900s. It's evolved to become less so nowadays and has been replaced in a lot of states with a statewide tax, as we talked about in Oregon, or several other states that have now used sales or income tax to replace it. Still, though, one of the basis of our country is a free education. And it's in many state constitutions where they talk about a thorough and efficient education being offered to students in the state. And it's open to everyone free of charge. If you start charging parents a fee, then you're going to start limiting the amount of kids who can go to school, and it's going to be a real difficult thing. And I don't think something many of us want to get into.
Mm-hmm. Has any state figured out the right formula, do you think, one that really works?
Well, Michigan has really come up with a different way, which is come up with a statewide property tax, and in addition have money come from the state sales and income taxes to help replace local property taxes. And it works in some ways, and it helps alleviate the property tax problem. The difficulty is, because, again, they are more reliant on sales and income tax, they are going through their own problems right now. Other places still stick with New Hampshire, for instance, sticks with local property taxes. The problem is then you have great inequities for student funding. So it's the mix that you want. How little do you want to rely on local property taxes? And how much stability do you want in your system?
Mm-hmm. We have another email from Kim Lundgren-Pogorsch, I believe. She asks, why are the fine arts and especially music education one of the first curriculum areas to be cut when schools' budgets are tight? I wonder if you find that indeed that's the case, that's the place that education cuts look first. That's a place where legislators or principals look first.
Well, what we tend to see is that states and school districts will look around the edges first, and they will look at what they would deem as extra programs, and that would include extracurricular activities. As far as laying off, say, music teachers or art teachers, that's something that most places don't take lightly. There's a lot of belief that they are the very first things to go, even before, say, sports teams, but there isn't a lot of proof behind that. The feeling is, in a lot of districts, they want to take their extra resources and put them towards those things that the state tests, English, math, and in certain states, social science and science. Mm-hmm. But and since in most places art and music are not included on that they probably get the short end of the stick. Mm-hmm. But again, it's not always true, and there isn't an awful lot of proof to back that up. There is an awful lot of proof to back up the fact that extracurricular activities, field trips, sporting events,
really take the hit.
Yeah, they do.
We're going to have to leave it there and say goodbye to Mike Griffith as we leave K through 12 and move on to college. Thanks so much for your time, Mr. Griffith.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mike Griffith is a policy analyst from the Education Commission of the States who joined us from Denver, Colorado. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.